prototypes were developed, and we also discussed how we might work with dogs from Dogs for the Disabled to evaluate these proposals. So what was really important there is how do they, we were looking at buttons and doors, the buttons and doors being particular problems with the dogs, because there's so many different kinds of buttons that work in lots of different ways, and opening doors as well, they can slide in and out, they can open one way, open the other way, the handles are all different. So that was a problem that the dogs had come up in their work, come up against. You know, which is, you know, one of the things you're sort of looking for in participatory design. So we thought about, from the dog's perspective, what solutions might they like to this problem, like for this problem. So we ended the day by reflective, so we just sort of discussed the overall what kind of things this might mean. You can see the dogs aren't here though, is the problem. So we go back to the humans. So as the workshops progressed, a few elements remained key. So this included at least a day of initial exploration, which was highly experiential and involved visiting beehives, wild swimming, and wood carving. After these activities, we tried to identify particular issues that might develop into research questions. And drawing on these experiences, we then worked through the steps of a particular participatory model in a workshop setting and tried to get a better sense of what each step might entail. So this included asking questions about how would you gather data with bees, and whether there's any privacy concerns when working with water. So these are both issues that come up a lot in participatory research, so how would you do them with our partners? Finally, we then stepped back from the experiment as such and reflected on what happened during the process in order to identify affinities and frictions and any other reflections. So many things happened at each of the workshops that it's difficult to capture them. Why don't you do that? So if you have a look on our website, so we've got we've got sort of a page description of the different things that happen, images, videos, blog posts that different people reflecting on what happened in the workshops, if you wanted to explore that a bit more. How much time do I have left?
It's 40 now, so
okay.
Another 10 minutes.
Okay. So I guess what I thought was really interesting was then to think about what kind of affinities, if you thought about participatory research, what kinds of, if we went back to the theory of participatory research, what kinds of things might we learn about the workshops that we held? So in the longer version of this article, there's a couple of different papers that I look at and pull out parts of these to try and analyse the workshops and how they went. So one of them is, it's kind of a standard review paper of what participatory research is and how it might be developing forward into the future. So Participatory Research Methods, A Methodological Approach in Motion by Jaak Bergold and Stefan Thomas. It's really interesting. It sort of just sets out what kinds of things are happening in the field. And it's a nice complement to think about it with. But I also think it's really interesting to look at Bill Cook and Uma Katari's book, Participation, the New Tyranny, which is very critical of participation in the development context. And it also helps you understand some of the negatives of how participation might not be as useful as what we might think. So first of all, there were some affinities. So what were the kind of affinities that we found from the workshops that we did and the kind of things that generally said about participatory research. So one of the ways participatory research is defined as it's defined as being geared towards, oops, this is when we were playing acoustics to get a sense of flow. One of the things that's talked about as being really important in participatory research is this exploration of differences between life worlds. So participatory research is described as being geared towards planning and conducting the research process with those people whose life world and meaningful actions are under study. So this emphasis on differences between life worlds links up with some of the work that's talked about in multi-species studies. So if you look at Jakob von Utzkul's work, where he talks about Umwelt, some people will know about that here. He's very interested in talking about how different creatures have different kinds of sensory systems. They experience the world in different ways based on what they can see, what they can hear, what they can feel. And they say we're all in different kinds of perceptual worlds. So you can find both in multi-species research and in participatory research this understanding that we're not in this same homogeneous world, that we're not experiencing it all the same way, but that coming from different contexts means that you understand what's important, you'll perceive things, you'll experience things in different ways from each other. So in both sides, the method is really interested in how do you find these bridges between these life worlds? How do you find connection points between them and come to understand these different life worlds with each other? So it was one of these affinities that seemed to be happening between participatory research and multi-species research. So the way this sort of fed into our own project is that when we organised our workshops, we spent time at the beginning doing sort of preparatory readings so that we could understand a bit more about how our research partner experienced the world. So for the plant workshop, the tree workshop, for example, we read articles on plant intelligence and people arguing that plants problem solve. So in a way, you could say that they think. Anthony Trovaras is one of the authors of that. So it's really interesting. There's lots of research coming out about how plants perceive in a way. So we read that kind of stuff before we went so we could be more aware of it. The dogs as well, we also tried to engage with stuff about how they see, how they perceive, how they problem solve. So trying to understand this kind of what might be the dog's perspective on a problem, how do they see and approach things. And this was also about getting the academics out of their usual habitats, which is something that happens in participatory research too. So it's really important where the research gets done. Is it in the place where the dominant group, like the academics, feel most comfortable? Or is it about moving out of the space so that you can work with the research partner in the place in their home, or not their homes, but where they feel more comfortable? So you can see lots of pictures of us doing very unusual things for academics sometimes. There's also this question of who decides who's competent enough to do research, who's competent enough to produce knowledge. And one of the things I thought was really important in looking at the participatory literature is that there's a strong emphasis there on recognising that decisions about who's competent to create knowledge aren't made objectively. They're made within cultures of power, cultures of dominance, where some people's knowledge is valued more than others. So within participatory research, there's the challenge to not just dismiss people as not being able to produce knowledge or just dismiss people as not knowing, but rather challenging what counts as knowledge, challenging methods of producing knowledge so that more people can be included.